And so anchoring impasses, it's almost unavoidable because it also deals with our experiences. When you're talking about retirement and like, I mean, that goes back to the idea of how some people have a retirement number and anchoring to a particular number. I think a really good example of it is misanchoring. Like, it's not always a bad thing. A lot of it deals with experiences, but sometimes anchoring can be, it's almost aligned with framing, and we can get to that too if we have time. But when you think about anchoring, here's a good example. Let's say you're in the market for a chair. And by the way, anchoring, sales, you know, focusing on, I won't buy anything unless it's on sale. We can talk about solutions to that too, but let's go. So focus on, you're looking for a chair and you go into your local town's furniture showroom and you find one. It's $250. Decent price for this decent chair. But you know what? You're right. You want to look for the sale and you go to the salesperson and say, you know what? I just want to think about this. So you walk out of the store, you get into your car, you pull out your phone and you start looking to find out if you can find it better, a better deal. And then all of a sudden you see that in the next town over, another showroom has it for 20% off. Chances are, if you really want that chair, you're going to go to the next town over for 20% off, right? But hold on, hold on a minute. Let's change the scenario a little bit. What if you were in that showroom, the local showroom, and you said, you know what? I've been saving up. I'm just going to do the whole living room. And they have this whole living room set for $2,500, right? And you do the same thing though. You go, you know what? Let me just think about this. I want it before I make a buy. And you go out of the store, you go into your car, you bring up the phone, you start looking. And then you see in the next town over, the same living room set, but the discount's only 2%. Are you going to bother going to the next town over for just 2%? But here's the thing. You anchored to percentages and the percentage of how much sales off. The dollar savings is the same. It's $50 either way. Why would that persist? So you're looking at it from the wrong anchoring point of view. So, you know, that's a way, you know, it's an interesting example I'm trying to give in a way somebody may not think about anchoring, but this happens all the time in so many different
like,
ways.
I felt like you are describing my husband. Down to the T. So let me share this interesting story and you'll laugh. This is a lot of anchoring. And what you just described with that chair purchasing experience is exactly what he typically will do. And he will drive distance to do that. And I always trying to figure it out. Is it really worth to drive that far to do that? So this is not a chair buying experience, but this is something that we still laugh today if I mention this. Years and years and years ago, we loved to travel to Maine when we were still living in Connecticut. And of course, when you travel to Maine, you have to be in the right season and you'll get the fresh lobsters right at the bay, depending on which town you go to. But about probably 10, 15 years ago, we stopped going to Maine because we moved down to Charlotte and all that. But we returned back to Maine for 10, 15 years ago, just to relive that experience. And my husband was circling the town like crazy. And I'm like, honey, what are you looking for? He's like, I am looking for that $2.99 lobster. And I said, oh my God, there is inflation in place. Yeah. And he was convinced that $2.99 store still exists. He was so convinced, he drove to the downtown parking area in the Portland area. And he asked the parking attendants, sir, you must live around here. Can you point me to the direction of the $2.99 lobster? And the guy looked at my husband, is like,
from another planet.
And so you're right, that anchoring effect of the number or the percentage, we oftentimes really focused on the wrong thing, even though in this case it's just a lobster. It's not necessarily big investment, but I think that anchoring effect apply in the investment in somewhere where people, let's say that they set a 10% contribution to their 401k, 403b, and things like that. And they felt like they set it and forget it, right? Mm-hmm. When they have salary increases, when they have bonuses, I don't necessarily see people change their percentage, right? Or, you know, there's a maximum and a catch up. A lot of people don't take that into consideration. So sometimes the anchoring effect happens in more than we can imagine.
And, you know, when you talk about the financial planning, you know, that is part of the issue, because sometimes when you set up, emotional connections, these emotional connections can impact the setting of expectations. And therefore, also the level of satisfaction that someone's going to get. So it's really important that if you're doing a financial plan or you're helping someone, or even for yourself, is again, being aware of what you're anchoring to. It's almost like you need to keep on pulling back up that anchor and redropping it again. You know what? And we were talking about investments earlier and how things change, right? And so when you're looking at your investments, it's good to pick up the anchor. And, but, you know, a great way of, for a lot of the things that I talk about that we may still talk about is, and I guess we'll talk about tips at the end. You know, I'll save it I'll save part of that in the end. I don't want to ramble too much because I want to be mindful of the time. So tell me what next you'd like to talk about. So I don't.
Okay. So there, speaking of anchoring, I think that there's, there is this perception that we always look for clients' biases, but I think that we as planners also have biases, and it's really, really dangerous to impose my bias to the plan of clients. What do I mean by that? So recently I took an assessment from, and many of you probably know Dr. Wei Fao. He just published his new book, The Fourth Books, if you will. And he has this assessment specifically designed for both advisors and retirees. It literally took me 20 to 30 minutes to fill out, but it was amazing for me to see that I finally able to understood why I have some sort of preferences when I recommend clients. And in this example, in his assessment is really, really complete, very telling about how I choose things. One of the example was, there's something called the retirement style matrix that he designed that shows that I actually, as a person, me, not my client, prefer to have something more predictable, which means that I am a prime candidate for product like annuity. Mm. And another style that I have is I also have the preference of, I prefer to delegate these kind of investment to someone else. And so as I look at my own assessment and I realize that, oh my goodness, I hope that I didn't make too much of a mistake in the past where I hope I did not unconsciously pass on my bias to the client's recommendation. Would you talk about this? Because I think that bias lives on every single one of us. And whether or not we consciously or unconsciously injected that to clients' planning or helping the clients to do certain things. So help us understand that these behaviors are in us, outside of us, and potentially could we could make mistakes by these biases.
There's been several studies just on market analysts, right? So you're looking at analysts' decisions on investments and how their own biases, you know, are influencing, although it sounds like facts, this almost goes into framing, right? In that you're only hearing right. what they're sharing. But one thing you brought up is, so you're, what you're really alluding to is behavioral styles as a whole. And, you know, I'm thinking about all my career with working with different agents or advisors and the like. And a lot of relationships are lost because of what you're talking about. And it's not always worried about what bias you have. It's about being aligned with your client. So when you do that kind of assessment, it kind of goes along the lines of whether it's, you know, they call it insights or DISC or whatever. You know, it's based on Carl Jung's color schemes almost. And
right.
And so here's the issue. Let's say I have a client. And I'm a storyteller, like you said. So I'm going to go, you know, Charlie, I have a client that's in a similar situation just like you. Let me tell you their story. And then we can work on working things out. Meanwhile, your behavioral style is more like Blue. You just want to know, just tell me what the performance should be. Just tell me the numbers. Just show me the numbers. I don't want to hear the stories. Just tell me the numbers. So you can destroy a relationship just because there's a mismatch of behavioral styles between right. your client and your advisor. And I think a lot of relationships get lost because of that.
And then I think that oftentimes advisors wonder that, how come that client, that prospect never come back?
And yeah, how come they're not listening to me?
On, yeah, probably early on, there is a huge mismatch in terms of the styles.
So this slide, you know, I put in there, I didn't have too much to say about, but I just love it. You know, I can't find, you know, I hope I'm not stealing something because I can't find where it's exactly sourced, but I've seen it in numerous places. But it really speaks a lot to reality and the points of view. And again, this is again about framing, actually. You know, it's almost like being at the crime scene and the investigators are asking two different people from two different perspectives and they saw the same thing. And they're neither one is wrong. They're just seeing it from a different lens. And I think a lot of behavior falls into this. And that's why I'm always, you know, one of the biggest things, and then again, we can talk about, you know, advice or tips later, but I want to mention it right now because this keeps coming up, is getting yourself from thinking outside of the box. You know, we talked about, you know, your endowment effect, we're talking about anchoring, we're talking about framing. In all these cases, the best thing to do is look at things as if they're not yours. You know, it's almost like saying, get into mindfulness. I have my personal favorite thing to do, and it sounds a little corny, but logic puzzles. Logic puzzles make you think outside the box. You have all this information. They give you limited information, but the answer usually makes you have to think what not necessarily from the view that they're forcing upon you. And I think that's what I was trying to get across with this particular image, is reality sometimes it's not black and white, it's all gray. And you know, even again, the key to all this is awareness, like you mentioned in the beginning of this webinar, but it's what you do with it. Even if you're aware of it and even if you follow it, doesn't mean you're going to make the optimal decision that's going to make the best performance or work best for you, but you'll make the best decisions that are aligned to your behavioral style and you'll feel more aligned to it.
And probably I think the best decision at that time, not necessarily, because every environment
you have to revisit
is going to trigger that.
You know, so going back to, so setting up behind, you know, a new lens, and you know, the other thing is we're in this technology, you know, you have so much access to different things. The trick is which is, you know, which you can trust. And you know what, trust goes to something else here, but it's about avoiding, you know, temptations, and that's a whole other story. And I'm looking at the time and I'm probably running out, so I won't go there, but you can listen to the podcast on that one. But online financial resources, think about it. If you're looking for a house, there are, how much house can you afford? How much auto can you afford? How long does it take to pay off this loan? How, you know, going to certain financial institutions will give you tools to say, am I on target for what I want for retirement? Now, it's always good, though, to be wary about what you're reading and watching, right? Because you mentioned it earlier. You know, what if you're being biased? What if the analysis is being biased and it doesn't seem like it, but it sounds good. And you have to be careful. I mean, I'm thinking about an example because I watch a lot of YouTube. I binge YouTube a lot. But yeah, and just like anything else, in about resetting things. Now, I'm sure everyone on this call or anyone who listens to this has watched YouTube for one reason or another. And what happens is once you grab onto something, YouTube will keep feeding you more and more deeper into that hole. And you get into a very aligned thought on whether it's about people, a situation, an idea, a concept, a product, how to do, you know, the next thing you know, you're all focused on this. Almost every day, I reset it because now all of a sudden YouTube or whomever, wherever you're getting advice or information, you're being swayed. And you need to reset it, just like the investments that you own. You need to re-examine them, you know, because also what you need to be wary because some things have changed in your life, right? You may have unexpected events in your own life.
If I can give an example here, that is that I recently heard from a clinical psychiatrist. He was talking about, think of yourself, the YouTube phenomena you just talked about, because that's a condition. A system is studying us and feeding us the information and feeding us more.
Right.
But we have to pull ourselves into almost, you know, think about the movie Matrix. Keanu Reeves was in the Matrix. And it took him a while to figure it out what is real, what is not real. And what you're saying, the reset, is almost like you have to put yourself in that situation, thinking that you are in this Matrix. What is real, what is not real, is really hard to differentiate. But if you have the ability to reset that, then you have a different way of looking at things, a different way of figuring out the games, if you will, because so much has been fed to us, purposely anchoring, framing for us to do something that maybe we don't need. And so very well said regarding about that YouTube scenario, no different than
right.
How we constantly took advice from the company we work for, who potentially could have a preset of asset allocations for this type of client, for that type of clients. And we are conditioned just to take them and recommend to the client, right? And that may or may not be right for that particular client.
And this is the other thing too, is if you're with a client, and we were talking about like this investment was right for at that time, and now you may have to come back to a client and say, this investment's no longer correct for you based on what we know. And it's like, how come you just told me that? And that's why you almost have to say, like, pretend you don't own what you have. And you have to say, okay, if I put this on the table and I looked at, if I was to consider buying this investment today, the same investment, are there new alternatives? Are there other options? Does this make sense? Based on my platform. The last thing on this list, by the way, with tips, I say get a behavioral coach. It doesn't mean get a therapist or, you know, a psychologist. It means finding someone in your world who's fairly balanced and can help you think outside of the box. And I think when I think about financial planners or a certified financial advisor or anyone in one of those fields who've taken a licensing to do what they do, you are a behavioral coach. That's part of your job, sometimes more than actually doing the mechanics of it. Because as we move more and more into more AI and more tools can create things, your key responsibility and the key value of your relationship is helping people go, don't do that. And, you know, I talk about this stuff and look, I'm in this world. Just because I talk about all these different behaviors doesn't mean I don't do them myself. I can't tell you how many times I feel like that child in the room where you know, you say, don't touch it, or it's going to be bad for you. Don't touch it, don't touch it. And I do. But the difference is knowing that you did that and knowing how to short circuit and knowing why you did it can also help you find that help, to, whether it's, again, through programs or people, to ensure that you are, you know, lack of, I hate the phrase per se, but staying the course, as they say.
Right. Now, obviously, in our program, we students take one full class, right, to study financial behavior. And we have a separate class for financial psychology and in therapy. And so we obviously won't have that much time to talk about today, but I wanted to turn back to you and say, out of everything that we talked about today, what is that one advice that you will leave for our audience? Just one thing. Obviously, there are tons of things, but what if there's just one advice? What would you say?
I'd have to go back to what I was saying before, I think, about trust. See, and again, one of the things we didn't talk, we were talking about avoiding temptations. And do I have 2 minutes?
Yes, you do.
Okay, great. I can't help talking about avoiding temptations without talking about, let's say, Walter Mitchell's famous marshmallow test, right? So he put, you know, he did it in the late 60s, early 70s. He put a bunch of preschoolers, over 500 of them over a period of time, in front of a table. There's a marshmallow, sweet tasting, delicious thing, tempting these children with this marshmallow. And his behavior, you know, his research assistant goes, hey, listen, you can have the marshmallow if you want, but here's the deal. I'm going to walk out of this room. If you can wait till I come back, you'll get two of them. But if you want it, ring the bell and you can have it. And this, there's an interesting, you know, obviously the study shows it gets you to about delayed gratification, because a lot of planning deals with delayed gratification. And you have to think more about not thinking and, you know, concentrating on pondering the taste. It's more about pondering the reward. And the reason why I bring this all up is some other studies were done, and I don't know why this is never brought up. And this is why I think this is where I need to talk about that one bit of advice is trust. Because it turns out one thing that they didn't think about when they were doing the testing back then is, believe it or not, some children were lied to when they were little. Imagine that. Promise something and then get it. And how many people waited for something to hope for it to get better, but someone took it away from them. So in as adults, this is in our brain. And when we talk about all these behavioral risks, and if you're trying to help someone and be a behavioral coach, right, you know it. And we're talking about relationships through this whole thing. You have to build that trust. So without that trust, people may veer off from their financial plan. And so if there's one thing you need to do is, and a way of gaining trust is helping people realize their behavioral risk, because you know what they'll say? If you talk to them and you help them recognize this, they're going to say, yeah, you know what, Charlie, you get me. You get me. I trust you. You get me. You understand why, the way I tick. I think you can help me achieve my financial objectives.
Well, that's an incredible advice that we are in the people business, and people business built on trust. And trust doesn't necessarily come through just by one or two conversations. It comes from multitude of we being curious about our clients, learning about their journeys and how can we best set them in the right path. And we do hold that incredible honor to do such job as a coach to help our client through it. And so thank you, Joe. This has been an incredible, insightful information session for us. And I know that we don't have a lot of time today. We're definitely going to have you back again.
I hope so.
Talk about, yeah, I'd love to have you come back again. There's so much to talk about this behavioral side of the financial things. And so thank you so much for that. And I also wanted to thank California Lutheran University School Management Financial Planning Program for sponsoring today's Next Gen Mentoring Forum. And California Lutheran University School of Management offers MBA in financial planning, helps financial advisors pursue a leadership position or grow their financial planning practice to deploying advanced financial planning, effective client communication, and streamlined practice management. To find out more information, please sign up for our next info session on September 23rd at 2 p.m. Pacific time for more information. Our next Gen Mentoring Forum session is on October 5th with our returning guest, Julie Fortin, who is a certified financial planner, certified financial behavioral specialist, and certified financial transitionist on the topic of how to integrate interpersonal neurobiology into financial planning. So thank you all. We look forward to seeing you the next time. Be safe and be well. Thank you.